Radio 1180 WHAM. Coast to Coast AM. And now, filling in for Art Bell, here's George Norrie.
In England, there's this place called the York Dungeon. And they are trying to trace a real human skull, which an employee apparently sold to a customer by mistake. The skull was on a shelf in the attraction's bookshop while awaiting use as a new prop. The dungeon had opened in 1986. People would go and see all kinds of strange things there. The employee said she didn't know the skull was real and sold it to a woman who wanted it for her son's skull collection. He actually keeps these things. The skull is one of a pair owned by the dungeon, the other one being donated by the widower of an archaeologist who had found it in a plague pit. Yep, a plague pit. The dungeon manager says, "We don't normally sell our props, and we certainly would not intend to sell this one. We are frantic to try to get it back. Skulls." Well, let me tell you something. Over the centuries, researchers have found bones and artifacts proving that humans like us have existed for millions of years. I mean, a real long time. We're going to talk a little bit about forbidden archaeology, the hidden history of the human race, with my guest Michael Cremo in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. I bet if you don't own a CC radio by the time the holidays come here, you probably will go out of your mind, because there'll probably be a backlog for them as people try to buy them quickly for holiday gifts and presents for the people they care about. So order yours now before it's too late. The CC Radio Plus. It's an AM/FM TV weather radio. It's only $159.95, and that price includes U.S. shipping. I say only because it's the greatest radio, the most sensitive AM radio made today. Now, it also picks up, as I said, FM, TV, and weather, not just AM. Your favorite news, talk, and sports programs will come in clear, and you will pick up more stations than ever before. The CC Radio Plus is simply the best radio for people that really listen to radio. Some of the other features with AM/FM TV audio and weather radioception with Weather Alert. A specially timed voice speaker so that the voices sound clear. It's got a simple one-button station memory. It's got a power cord. You can use it on batteries. You can take it on picnics. Whatever you want to do, your CC Radio Plus is there for you. If you're not ready to buy it, you should be, but if you're not, you can also call the C. Crane Company and get a catalog. Only one. Call them in the morning, 1-800-522-8863. The number again for more information about the CC Radio Plus or a free C. Crane catalog. It's a great radio. I have one. 1-800-522-8863 or go to the web at ccradio.com.
Would you like to feel 10 years younger in 10 weeks? Now there's proof. The effects of aging can be slowed down and even reversed with HGH, human growth hormone. For some time now, you've heard me talk about the incredible age-reversing benefits of HGH. Well, according to thousands of articles, higher HGH levels can help you look and feel younger. That's why I take Ultimate HGH, a natural formula to help boost my body's own production of HGH. If your goal is to help improve energy, stamina, lose unwanted fat, diminish wrinkles, enhance memory, immune function, and vision. An Ultimate HGH is for you, too. Why let Mother Nature get the best of you? Call today and order Ultimate HGH. And when you order two bottles of Ultimate HGH, you get the third absolutely free, about $33 a month. Now, that's a tremendous savings off the typical $100 a month for comparable products. Plus, with your order, you'll receive a free book on HGH, a $20 value absolutely free. So, call my good friends at Great American Products and order Ultimate HGH today at 1-800-557-4627. That's 1-800-557-4627. 1-800-557-4627.
Well, Michael Cremo was born July 15th, 1948 in Schenectady, New York. And from the very beginning, his life has been a spiritual quest for love and truth. He's obsessed by this. He really is, as I am. His father served as an American intelligence officer for the United States Air Force, and Michael grew up all over the world. He went to high school at American school in Germany. He spent his vacations traveling all over Europe. He entered George Washington University and became immersed in the counterculture and gradually gave up plans to enter government service and continued to study Eastern philosophy and esoteric spiritual teachings. After very carefully studying all kinds of things, a gift from some Hare Krishna people at a Grateful Dead concert kind of changed his life. Cremo began to absorb himself in the yoga of devotion to the mysterious Lord Krishna and moved to Los Angeles to join the staff of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. He wrote for, and I'm going to try to pronounce this one, the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust, and became a series of books aimed at both scholarly and popular audiences. The first to be published was The Forbidden Archaeology, The Hidden History of the Human Race, a wonderful book, by the way. This book shows that archaeologists and anthropologists over the past 150 years have accumulated vast amounts of evidence showing that humans like ourselves have experienced and existed on this planet for tens of millions of years. Tens of millions of years. We show how this evidence has been suppressed, ignored, and forgotten because it contradicts generally held ideas about human evolution. In lecture presentations on forbidden archaeology to scientific and lay audiences around the world, Michael Cremo has seen a new consciousness emerging that integrates science and religion into a very cohesive paradigm of reality. My guest tonight on Coast to Coast is Michael Cremo. Hello, Michael. Welcome to the program.
Good to be back with you, George.
Always a pleasure, my friend. What have you been up to in the last few months? Anything?
Well, I've been doing, quite a bit of traveling around the world. You know, my books are being published in many languages, and when they come out in the different languages, I get invitations to go and speak in those countries. So most recently, I've been in the Ukraine and Slovenia, because those are countries where the book has come out recently. Yeah, the trip to the Ukraine was pretty interesting. I was invited to speak by the Institute of Archaeology of the Ukrainian Academy of Sciences. I spoke to a group of about 50 of their top archaeologists, and it was really pretty interesting. Sometimes people are very amazed that I'm able to do things like that. I mean, there are people out there in this world that say, well, science and religion, they just don't mix, and what Cremo is saying is just a bunch of non-scientific nonsense. And but I find the actual scientists are a little bit more open-minded than that in many cases. Not all of them have closed minds. So I thought it was pretty interesting that I got that invitation to speak to the top group of archaeologists in the whole country at their Academy of Sciences. And it was really interesting. I went through the whole thing with them. You know, I explained how my research into the history of archaeology is inspired by, you know, my studies of the ancient Sanskrit writings of India, which do talk about civilizations and that have existed for millions of years on this planet, that there has been a human presence here for millions of years, and then I laid out the evidence for them. I went through case after case from the scientific literature, and I also went over the process of what I call knowledge filtration, by which this evidence tends to be forgotten, set aside, ignored, and in some cases actively suppressed. And it was really quite interesting. After the talk, a group of them came up to me, and they began telling me how this knowledge filtering process is going on. They've seen it themselves. Yes. They've seen it operating in their own country, in the field of archaeology. And then another one of them said he was really happy to hear me. He said that years ago and among the archaeologists in that country, when he said they used to talk more about these theoretical issues, but lately he said they've all just become very orthodox in their thinking, and he was sort of happy that somebody had come to rock the boat a little bit, get people thinking, get the minds out of the ruts, so to speak.
Well, you've got us thinking, Michael, I'll tell you that. When I first picked up your very first published book, Forbidden Archaeology, which is a huge book, by the way, I couldn't put it down. I mean, there were so many just astounding facts and revelations in that book that have now carried through to the hidden history of the human race. My first thought was, why hasn't mainstream science jumped on this? And it's good to know that some of these scientists now are at least beginning to listen to you. And at least you've got to feel good about that, huh?
Yes, and as I said, the scientific world is quite a diverse place. There are people in archaeology and anthropology who say, I have no place in their world. They don't want me there at all. But then on the other hand, there are more open-minded scientists who are very eager to hear what I have to say. For example, this is about 2 years ago, I was invited to speak by the Royal Institution in London, and it's a scientific society. It's a very prestigious scientific society. It's one of the oldest scientific societies in the world. It's been there for 300 years, and they invited me to speak. And some scientists were just shocked. They were shocked, you know, that they would invite me. And it's the same all over the world. You know, it's the same all over the world. There are open-minded scientists. For example, this coming year, 2003, in June, I'll be heading up one of the sections of the World Archaeological Congress, which is one of the international organizations. It's the primary international organization for archaeologists. They meet every 4 years in a different city around the world. And I've been able to present papers at those conferences, and some of them have actually been published.
Good for you.
In peer-reviewed scientific publications. So this is, for what I would call the fundamentalist Darwinist in the scientific community, and particularly in the field of archaeology, they're highly upset by this. They can't believe it's happening.
Why do some scientists, I guess a lot of scientists, why are they so reluctant to accept some of your theories and some of the findings that you present in your work? Why don't they say, you know, well, maybe it's true? How come they fight it?
Well, the ones that are what I would call these very rabid extremists, who will go under the names of skeptics and rationalists, they're skeptical about everything except the Darwinian theory of evolution. You know, they're skeptical about everything but that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so anything, they're trained like dogs, really. You know, sometimes you know, you have a watchdog, and you know, you go into his neighborhood, he'll bark, whoever it is. So whenever they see something that goes against the Darwinian theory of evolution, it's like a Pavlov dog reaction, that they won't consider the evidence. All they have to know is it goes against the Darwinian theory of evolution, and immediately they just began barking. And that's pretty much you know, the way it is. And those people, I have no hope whatsoever, because they're not real intellectuals. They're not real skeptics. They're not real rationalists. They've just created a dogma for themselves, and they're going to stick to it till the day they die. But fortunately, I would say they represent, I would say, somewhere between maybe 10 and 15% of the scientific community, I would say. And the rest of them, there are many people who accept this Darwinian theory of evolution, but they're not dogmatic about it. They are willing to listen. And then there are some who are actually even willing to question it and think, well, perhaps it's wrong. And those are the people that I'm actually trying to reach. And for those who are just stuck with these old ideas, mm-hmm. and who aren't willing to change, who aren't ready to be skeptical of their own dogmas, then they just have to be, they're in a different category. I don't have any illusions about changing their minds.
Right. Well, if your theories are correct, and we're going to try to unravel that tonight and look at it and dissect it, but if your theories are correct that mankind might have been on this planet not for hundreds of thousands of years in the form that we understand now, but maybe tens of millions of years ago, to me it also tells us that there might have been several catastrophes on this planet, Michael, that might have wiped them out. They could have been natural. They could have been asteroids. They could have been wars from within. But something happened if we are indeed tens of millions of years old. And I want to get your thoughts on that.
Okay, I think you're... do we have time to talk about it now?
Yeah, we sure do.
Well, okay. I think you're absolutely right about that. Now, the way I approach these questions is... Now, sometimes people talk about a conflict between, you know, science and religion. I don't see myself as a scientist. I don't see myself as a religionist. I see myself as a human being who is willing to use all the various sources of knowledge that are available to me. If I can use scientific knowledge, I'll use that. If I get some, if I find some knowledge from some ancient wisdom tradition that helps me understand the world and my place in it, I'll use that. I see myself as a human being who's after knowledge. So I have found that some of the writings of these ancient wisdom traditions, and the Sanskrit tradition of India is the one I'm most familiar with, but it's not the only one, they do appear to have information that tells us something about the history of the world, and these repeated catastrophes that you're talking about that appears to match up with what modern science is saying. For example, we find in modern paleontology that the oldest undisputed fossil evidence for life that they have, you know, tiny one-cell creatures, goes back about 2 billion years.
Right.
And then they say there have been, since that time, going up to the present, from 2 billion years ago up to the present, there have been 6 major extinction events spaced at intervals of hundreds of millions of years. And the last major extinction event would have been the asteroid that came and wiped out the dinosaurs. Now, if we look at the ancient Sanskrit writings of India, they tell us that life began on this planet at what they call the beginning of the day of Brahma. You know, they believe that time goes in vast cycles. And the cycle that the basic unit of this cyclical time is called the day of Brahma. And if we look at the ancient Sanskrit calendars, we find that the last creation cycle began about 2 billion years ago. And then those writings tell us that a day of Brahma is divided into 14 subdivisions called Manvantara periods, each lasting about 300 million years. And they say that we're in the seventh now. And between each of those Manvantara periods, there's a devastation. So that means there have been 6. So it's really interesting. You know, if you approach this question looking at these various sources of knowledge, they match up. Paleontology tells us life began about 2 billion years ago. and there have been six major extinction events. Mm-hmm. You look at the ancient Sanskrit writings of India, they say life began on this planet in the current creation cycle about 2 billion years ago, and there have been six major devastations since then.
Remarkable,
and
isn't it?
I think it is. I think, and of course, this is not, the ancient Greeks philosophers, they said the same thing. There have been cycles of creations and destructions. Plato and Aristotle said civilizations have come and gone over vast periods of time, like Atlantis. And I think that is true. Yeah, that idea that you expressed is something that we find supported in paleontology, if we look at it. And it's also supported in these ancient writings. Now, what's different between modern paleontology and the ancient Sanskrit writings is the Sanskrit writings would say that human beings were present in each of those periods of time between these big devastations, whether we're talking about the Manvantara periods or the six major extinction events.
And what we don't know, though, is how advanced they might have been at that time, right?
Well, it depends upon what sources of knowledge, that we want to take. As I said, as human beings, we can make use of all these sources of knowledge. If we look at some of these ancient Sanskrit writings, we'd find that, first of all, human beings were present. And second of all, they had high levels of culture.
How high, Michael?
Well, they speak about spaceships, vimanas, traveling from planet to planet. They speak of use of electricity. They speak of, it's incredible when you actually get into these things.
You mean possibly back millions of years ago, Earthlings might have had that kind of technology?
Yes. Now,
my God.
Now, what I've been able to say, verify from other sources of knowledge, like what you dig out of the ground, is at least we know that human beings were present, because there are human footprints and human skeletons and human artifacts that go back hundreds of millions of years. And it doesn't seem that there are some indications in the form of different artifacts that have been found that at least they had some level of culture. Now, for some of these other things, somebody might ask, well, has anybody found one of these spacecraft, that's millions of years old?
Exactly.
That's another question. I think one problem is most scientists haven't been looking for such things.
I'm always wondering, and stay with us, Michael, if Neil Armstrong, when he walked on the moon, might have seen remnants of past Earth civilizations that had already landed on the moon millions of years before that. Think about that for a moment. That's astounding if that was possible. We'll talk about that in just a moment and a whole bunch more as we talk about the hidden history of the human race. I'm George Norrie in for Art Bell tonight, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
WHAM's radar weather for Rochester and Western New York. Partly to mostly cloudy, mild and breezy for the overnight. The low 63 to 68. Could be a quick spotty shower on the west side. And then during the day on Wednesday, still on the warm, breezy side, clouds will limit the sun dull. There'll be a period of showers, even a thunderstorm in spots. Wednesday's high 75 to 80. Thursday, noticeably cooler and breezy with morning gray skies breaking for sunshine. Thursday's high 63 to 68. This is WHAM's Kevin Williams.
The Syracuse Orange Men are back.
Touchdown, Syracuse!
And the only place to hear the Orange is Rochester's sports leader, News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Touchdown, Walter Reyes! Holy cow! What a run by the sophomore!
Join the new voice of the Orange, Mark Johnson, for every SU game, home and away, all season long. When the Syracuse Orange Men play, they play on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Harmon Hardwood Floors presents Ask the Experts. Helpful hints from the pros at Harmon.
Few of the fixtures or appointments in your home can match the value of hardwood flooring. Its timeless beauty is truly a lifetime flooring solution. When choosing a hardwood floor for an area of your home, consider the amount of traffic, moisture, and overall wear the floor must endure. Certain species of wood and finishes will hold up better against wear factors, such as high-heeled shoes and pets that can scratch or dent your floor. The experts at Harmon can assist in choosing the right hardwood floor for any area of your home.
For the very best selection and advice on your hardwood flooring project, visit Harmon Hardwood Floor's spacious, no-nonsense, no-pressure showroom at 29 Hebbard Street at the end of Trinidad across from the Public Market downtown. Or call 546-1221 for more information.
Nobody knows more about your hardwood floor than Harmon Hardwood Floors.
Call 546-1221 and speak with a Harmon Hardwood flooring expert today.
Roberts has a really great way of making you feel comfortable. You're a part of something that's, you know, personal, not just a number.
Helen Smith, a junior in pre-med at Roberts Wesleyan College.
Roberts is a place that wants you to get involved. A lot of our outside activities get us out there into the community and get us working with people that are underprivileged. And that, you know, that's not a degree. That's an experience. It's unbelievable all the things that you can do if you look for it. It's nonstop. You know, you get done with a semester and you are so exhausted because you've been on the go, wake up class, activities, homework, go to bed, you know. It's definitely a fun experience, but with a meaning to it. And I know that when I graduate, when I step out, I will make a difference someday.
Discover the difference at Roberts Wesleyan College. Call 594-6400 or go online to roberts.edu.
Definitely come to Roberts because it's a very cool place to be.
Coast to Coast AM, driven by Bob Johnson Chevrolet.
How many times have you looked in the mirror and seen a reflection of a much older person? Nature does have its way of playing cruel tricks on us. But now, you can make a remarkable change in your life by simply erasing decades of wear, stain, and broken teeth with the miracles of cosmetic dentistry. At Village Smiles, we're experts at restoring that youthful smile that's slowly disappeared over the decades. We enhance your teeth and create a beautiful new smile you'll be proud to display. We can achieve this remarkable transformation in as few as 2 visits. I invite you to visit our unique dental office and experience for yourself our relaxed environment and comfortable 5-star service. Cosmetic dentistry of the future is available now at Village Smiles.
Call today to schedule a free, no-obligation cosmetic consultation with Dr. Schwedfeger and give yourself a gift of a new smile, one you surely deserve. Call 385-2033 or visit on the web at villagesmiles.com.
Talk Back is back. Tell us what you think about Wham's program lineup. Go online to wham1180.com.
Presents Coast to Coast AM. And now, filling in for Art Bell, here's George Norrie.
Yes, indeed. Broadcasting from a mystical place tonight where even sorcerers cannot find me, though they are trying with their magical crystal balls. Hey, bop over to Art Bell's website, artbell.com. Click on Program Tonight's Guest. Scroll down where you see the name Michael Cremo and link up with his website and have yourself one heck of a time and look at some of the books he's written as well, because that's what we're talking about tonight. Hey, the After Dark newsletter, 1-888-727-5505. That is the phone number for you. You get 14 issues for the price of 12. The October issue is out, and tremendous reviews, rave ratings on the After Dark newsletter. 1-888-727-5505.
The After Dark newsletter has been reporting subjects that we talk about right here on the show. And just like the show, After Dark has been evolving and changing and keeping folks guessing. You never know what you're going to get next, but it's always a lot of fun. Give yourself a treat and subscribe. Just log on to my website, artbell.com. Go to the library link on the left. You'll find the After Dark link in the menu there. Click and you can subscribe on the secure server. Or call any time of the day or night, toll free, 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505. For only $39.95, you'll receive this four-color magazine every month for a year. Subscribe right now and you'll get two free issues, 14 for the price of 12. Subscribe online at artbell.com or call right now, 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505.
Hey, 1-800-413-9400.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Why don't you listen closely? Because you're not alone. More than 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make these frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by the nationally recognized physician, Dr. Michael Teplisky. The results with his patients have been amazing, simply amazing. And take it from me, reclaim control now and join the legions of listeners who have had absolutely incredible results because it really works. When you order two bottles of Dr. Teplisky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Antioxidant Formula to reduce inflammation and further support the health of your prostate, plus his groundbreaking book, The Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter. That's a total $100 value, free as your gift, guaranteed to work, or your money back. Now, if you're not completely satisfied with these, return it for a full refund and keep the book and newsletter free as your gift. This is not available in stores, so call now. 1-800-603-7277. 1-800-603-7277. 1-800-603-7277. Welcome back. Michael Cremo, my guest. Michael, we were talking about some of the very strange technology that might have been available back millions of years ago. Let me get your take on it. What might have been available?
Well, one thing that these ancient Sanskrit writings mention are vimanas. Spacecraft that could travel from planet to planet. They're, you know, they're described extensively. And, of course, one thing about these technologies is that some of them may have been based on the type of physics, the type of machinery that we're aware of today. In other words, metallic machines running on standard sorts of fuels.
Right.
But apparently, they also had some technologies that were based on their understandings of more subtle energies and things like that. And these may have been based on, you know, they may not have been metal machines. If you look at some of these ancient Sanskrit writings, they talk about different, what they call siddhis, yogic perfections that people could master. And it seems that a lot of our modern technologies are attempts to do the same sorts of things with different different types of materials.
Well, is it possible, though, Michael, that maybe they are also talking about space travelers who came to this planet?
Yes. According to these ancient Sanskrit writings, there are 400,000 humanoid species scattered throughout the universe. We're just one.
400,000?
Yes. And that's not so unusual. I mean, if we think about it, astronomers will tell us that, the universe is a pretty vast place. There are a lot of planets out there. Their latest calculations is that there may be millions of habitable planets right within our own galaxy. And they find more and more all the time. Practically every month or so, they're announcing they've discovered new planets orbiting around the stars, either in our galaxy, somewhere in other parts of our galaxy. And some of them, would have to be habitable by different humanoid types. When you first hear an idea like this, that there might be as many as 400,000 different humanoid species scattered throughout the universe, it sounds pretty unusual. But if we consider the number of planets that are out there, it becomes a possibility.
Absolutely, and it may be small, that number.
That may be a small number, right? But there's another aspect to this, because there's what we might call linear travel, what we might call a horizontal dimension. In other words, we exist on a particular planet that has a certain level of energy, and there are other planets that might be similar to ours that have beings similar to us operating on the same level of energy.
Mm-hmm.
But when we look into the ancient Sanskrit writings and into modern physics and modern cosmology and modern astrophysics, we get the idea that there may be other dimensions. And the techniques that you would use to travel, say, horizontally in our dimension might not be the same techniques that you would use to travel vertically through other dimensions. That might require a different type of technology, more of a technology of consciousness, rather than a technology of simply going from place to place by machine. For example, on a website, say if you have a certain level of access, you can only get to one level of it.
Right.
But if you have a password, then you can go to another level. But you have to have that password to do it. In other words, there's something else that's required, to get through to these different dimensions. So I think our universe is actually structured like that. We can travel from place to place on this planet or from place to place in the solar system using the types of technologies that we're familiar with, but to go to higher dimensions, that may require something else.
Well, at least for this part of the theory, Michael, do you base your thoughts and acceptance on the Sanskrits? How do you know it wasn't a wonderful story that they wrote?
Well, I think the correspondences between what the writings say and what I'm able to observe in the world are one factor that convince me that it's not just a beautiful story. And another factor is there are techniques described, of meditation, derived from different yoga systems that you can practice and you can get results from them. So if it were just stories, I wouldn't be so interested. But I think there's some practical results. And there are also correspondences with what we actually see in the world. For example, as I said, I went through these historical writings, and this is something that you don't just find in the Sanskrit writings.
Okay, so you've got corroboration somewhere.
Well, the Greek, the Roman, writings, the Mayans. If you look at practically every ancient wisdom tradition in the world, they tell you that human beings have been around for vast periods of time.
What about the Bible?
Bible, too, says in the beginning, God made Adam and Eve in the beginning.
They just don't say when the beginning is, I guess, huh?
Well, there are different among the people who are what we might call biblical creationists. There is one group who favor a short chronology. They would say that the beginning goes back about 6,000 years or so, no more than 10,000 years. And those are what you might call the young earth creationists. And I know a good many of them. And what I say to them is, I said, whether we think the earth is 6,000 years old or 6 billion years old, human beings have been around since the beginning. That's what the evidence shows. And on that basis, we're able to come to some understanding and say, well, yeah, okay, well, that's true. And later on, we can talk about, you know, whether it's how old the earth really is.
Okay, I'd like to get your thoughts on that. Go ahead.
So, of course, I favor, you know, an earth with an age in the billions. And that's what the Sanskrit writings say.
Right.
That's the evidence that we get from modern geology and paleontology.
You mean you're not a 6,000-year-old theorist on that?
No. On the basis of the ancient Sanskrit writings and on the basis of what I know from geology and paleontology, you know, I favor an age of the Earth in, you know, the mid-billions.
Michael, do we have any hard evidence out there that people have seen that would testify to some of these theories?
Which one in particular, for example?
Well, let's say the theory of mankind being millions and millions of years old.
Well, of course, that's been my whole central field of research since about 1984. And, yes, there is hard evidence out there. There is evidence in the form of human skeletons, human artifacts, and human footprints that have been found in layers of rock millions and millions of years old. You know, for example, Mary Leakey in 1979, she found a series of footprints at a place called Laetoli in the country of Tanzania in East Africa. And she looked at these prints, and she brought in physical anthropologists to look at them, and they said these footprints are no different than modern human footprints. They're no different than the footprints that you or I would make if we were walking on a beach today. Now, she herself because she was an evolutionist, she couldn't believe that human beings were present at the time these footprints were made. These footprints were made 3,700,000 years ago, 3.7 million years ago, because they were found in solidified volcanic ash, which can be dated using what's called the potassium-argon method. And without going into all the details about what that method is, scientists determined that the layers of rock in which these footprints were made is 3.7 million years old.
Jeez.
And now Mary Leakey didn't believe that human beings like us were walking around 3.7 million years ago. So what she said is, well, there must have been some kind of ape man who was existing at that time, who had feet exactly like ours. And that's certainly possible, but scientists have the skeletons, the ape men that existed at that time. You know, they were from the species Australopithecus, and they have foot bones from these creatures, and their feet are different than modern human feet. You know, they have long, big toes that go out to the side like your thumb. Like if you pick up your hand, look at your hand and look at your thumb, and you can see your thumb is long. It can move out to the side. So the big toes of these creatures were like that, and their their toes, their other toes, the four other toes on each foot, were also quite long.
I mean, so, you can make a 90-degree angle with your thumb.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Now, you know, so you look at your foot. Most people can't do that.
No, but you can't.
Now, this topic, it came up for me when I was speaking at the World Archaeological Congress, the last one, which was held in Cape Town, South Africa, a couple of years ago. And there was a scientist there who had recently discovered a skeleton of Australopithecus. His name was Ron Clark, and he found this skeleton at a place called Sterkfontein in South Africa. And he had the foot bones of this creature, and he made a model of the foot. And he presented it at this conference. And you know, if you look at the model of the foot, you could see it has these very ape-like features to it. So it was about the same age as the footprints found by Mary Leakey. So I happened to be in the audience at that time. And after he spoke and made this presentation, I raised my hand, and he called on me. So I put the question to him, well, why is it that this model of the foot that you made, you know, from the bones of this Australopithecus creature, why is it that that foot doesn't match the footprints that were found by Mary Leakey, which are the same age? I mean, you see the problem that he had. He was claiming he had, you know, an old human ancestor.
You trapped him.
But you got footprints of human beings just like us at the same time period somewhere else in Africa. So how did he answer my question? He said, well, actually, it was my ape man that made those footprints found by Mary Leakey, but he was walking with his big toe pressed up close to the other ones.
What did he do, tape it together?
Like that. And then he said he was also walking with his other long toes curled under. Now, that's really ridiculous because, you know, if you look at those footprints, you don't see any knuckle marks. And the footprints are actually three different tracks, you know, three different individuals, you know, walking. And you would think that it would be walking normally. The creatures would be walking with their feet in the normal position, their toes in normal position, at least some of the time. You know, why would three of them be walking in that very awkward way, which isn't held out? I mean, it doesn't. Like I said, if they were walking with their toes curled under and pressed up against each other, you could see that.
Why would they do that?
Now, and it was very interesting. You know, like, you know, the whole audience of about 1,000 archaeologists that were listening to this presentation, they just accepted it. Now, you would think if they had any brains at all, if they had the least amount of skepticism or something, they would have said something. But it's just how this knowledge filtering process works. You know, if there's evidence that staring them right in the face that goes against their theory, they'll just make some mental adjustment. They'll say, yeah, well, that sounds logical. He was walking with his toes curled under and his big toe pressed up against the other ones. That explains it. And then they don't have to think about it. You know, some explanation has been offered that makes the evidence fit their theory. And on they go. So, you know, it really takes somebody like me to be there to question these things, because otherwise nobody would even raise a question.
You have talked about and have written about something that I find extremely remarkable. And I want everyone who is listening tonight to hear this story from you. But it has to do with little steel balls that were found. Why don't you go into that?
Well, the oldest, you know, objects that I found in the research that I did were some round metallic spheres, objects that come from a place called Otosdalen in South Africa, from the Western Transvaal region. And miners have found these things over the past couple of decades. They're found at a place where they mine a particular mineral. And actually, this mineral, it's a very interesting mineral. It's actually used to make the heat shields on our space shuttles because it's a very heat-resistant
right.
mineral. But solidly embedded in these mineral deposits, they find these round objects. They're 1 or 2 inches in diameter. And the really interesting feature of them is they have, going around the center of each object, parallel grooves. Some of them have 3, some of them have 4, some of them have 2, some just 1. And the objects are made of a naturally occurring type of iron called hematite. And that's why I call them metallic, because they're made of hematite, which is a type of iron ore. And the mineral deposit in which these things are found are about, the mineral deposits are 2.8 billion years old. In other words, they're over
2.8 billion. That was a B you said, right?
Billion with a B. Now, we showed these objects on a television program a couple of years ago. It was aired on NBC. It was called The Mysterious Origins of Man, and it was hosted by Charlton Heston. So the producer of the show, Bill Cote, out of New York, he sent these objects, before he filmed them, he wanted to get them tested. So he sent them to an independent company of metallurgists who examined them, and they said they could see no way in which these objects could have formed naturally in the layers of the Earth.
All right, keep that thought.
Been manufactured.
Keep that thought, because I want to finish talking about that and some other things about the hidden history of the human race. Have we been around for a long, long time and catastrophes have just wiped us out, global or otherwise? I'm George Norrie, and I'll be back with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast.
Climbed aboard the Dreamweaver train. Trying to take away my worries of today and leave tomorrow behind. Ooh, Dreamweaver, I believe you can get me through the night.
Having an accident with your car or truck is an awful experience. This is Rick Dorschel to let you know that Dorschel's Collision Repair Center on West Henrietta Road will return your car to like new. Dorschel will take care of all the insurance paperwork and get you back on the road, because Dorschel has all the latest high-tech equipment and skilled, experienced professionals to use it. Dorschel uses only industry-approved repair procedures, and we don't cut any corners repairing your car or truck. Our finishing department is so good, the people with classic automobiles have had Dorschel do the painting. In fact, our paint department has just been retrofitted with the finest complement of new prep stations and downdraft paint ovens to be found anywhere in the Northeast, with a controlled environment much like an operating room. It's so unique, we invite you to see it for yourself. As a franchise new car dealer, we know your car. And the investment we've made in our updated Collision Repair Center is proof of Dorschel's ongoing commitment to you. And remember, all Dorschel's repair work is 100% guaranteed. Unfortunately, if you have an accident, it's definitely Dorschel.
Here's Dan Richards, president of Ontario Honda and Ontario Mazda.
Being a Honda and Mazda dealer in Canandaigua, we need more ways to get our message out than just drive-by traffic. After trying several different approaches, we've come up with a combination that seems to be effective in getting our name and message out to the public. Without a doubt, WHAM is a strong part of our plan. We've gotten terrific results with WHAM, especially since we've been working with Beth Adams. Beth has been a customer of Ontario Honda for over 12 years, and she does a great job of communicating to WHAM listeners. One of the things we like best about WHAM is the ability to change our message almost instantaneously, which is vital in the automobile business. When it comes to advertising, we use certain media because we feel we have to. We use WHAM because we know it works.
To improve your business, call WHAM General Sales Manager Dan Guilfoyle at 454-4884, extension 117. WHAM gets results.
News, weather, sports, and more online at wham1180.com. This is News Radio 1180 WHAM Rochester,
a Clear Channel radio station.
CBS News. I'm Jim Shenevy. New Jersey Democrats have chosen the candidate they want to replace Robert Torricelli on the November ballot for the U.S. Senate, retired Senator Frank Lautenberg.
I look forward to this campaign. in some ways, rather perversely, it'll be the shortest campaign I've ever been engaged in.
Capitol Hill correspondent Bob Fuss.
Lautenberg served in Congress for 18 years, including two terms as New Jersey's senator, before retiring in 2000. He is 78, but made clear as soon as Torricelli dropped out that he would be interested in coming back. There's no small irony in this, since he's had a long-running political feud with Torricelli, and is one of the last people the outgoing senator would have wanted to replace him.
The New Jersey Supreme Court has to consider setting aside a deadline for making ballot changes before Lautenberg's candidacy can go forward. Torricelli announced he was quitting the race after polls showed him trailing Republican Douglas Forrester. Hurricane Lily has entered the Gulf of Mexico with 105-mile-per-hour winds. Forecasters at the National Hurricane Center say it could pose a threat to the coasts of Louisiana and Texas as soon as tomorrow. CBS News meteorologist George Cullen.
Areas right along the Gulf Coast, and here we're talking mainly the shores of Louisiana and northeastern Texas. Folks down there should prepare today. If you have to evacuate, if you have to sandbag, do it today. Don't wait until Thursday.
Jake Kramer is packing up his household in Grand Isle.
I'd stay, but I got the little kids. I got a newborn baby at home, and no lights, no water for days, and you can't go like that with children.
More talks scheduled today in the West Coast port lockout, but it's unclear if they'll be held. Union negotiators walked out of yesterday's federally mediated session when representatives of the Pacific Maritime Association showed up with armed security guards. Meantime, the shutdown of the docks continuing to cause problems for businesses. Bob Butler of KCBS reports.
Paramount Export ships produce overseas for California growers. Company president Nick Kukulon has 28 containers sitting at ports all up and down the coast.
We got grapes, we got peaches and nectarines and plums, we got apples, pears, lettuce. Just the whole range of West Coast agricultural products.
He can't get truckers to cross the picket lines to bring the containers out. He worries he may have to eat $500,000 in spoiled produce.
Customers may say, I don't want it now. Take it off and salvage it there in the States. I don't want this stuff.
Bob Butler, CBS News, Oakland, California.
A Milwaukee man severely beaten by more than a dozen children has died. Doctors declaring 36-year-old Charlie Young brain dead yesterday, 2 days after he was beaten with rakes, shovels, and baseball bats after he'd chased down a child who'd struck him with an egg. Milwaukee Police Chief Arthur Jones.
What makes it more sad for me, and you ask me personally, is the age of the individuals involved.
Ages 10 to 18. An assistant to Martha Stewart, stockbroker, has reportedly reached a plea deal and will testify against her in the M-Clone insider trading case. This is CBS News.
I love listening to radio so much, we started Seat Crane Company. Hi, this is Bob Crane, and if you love listening to radio, let me tell you about our brand new CC Radio Plus. The CC Radio will pick up more stations than you ever had before, and the stations you listen to now will come in clearer. And the sound is rich and truthful for the best human voice possible. And I personally guarantee that the CC Radio is the best radio you can own for news, information, and sports. You can learn more about the CC Radio by getting our free catalog that tells all about the CC Radio and dozens of other unique items. You can give us a call right now at 800-522-8863. Or on the web at ccradio.com.
The CC Radio Plus is just $159.95, and that includes shipping. That number again, for more information or a free Sea Crane catalog, is 800-522-8863. That's 800-522-8863. And on the web at ccradio.com.
The White House conference on missing, exploited, and runaway children gets underway today. President Bush set to unveil a national standard for rapid response electronic notification of missing kids. More from reporter John Harchie.
Parents who have lost a child know all too well what the White House conference will address is a big problem.
About one child a day is either murdered or long-term missing.
Florida resident Don Rice's 9-year-old son Jimmy was killed by a sexual predator 7 years ago. Since then, he and his wife have been active trying to help fight what he calls a type of domestic terrorism.
I can't think of a better way to have the nation focus on it than to have the White House be the one to sponsor an event like this.
Rice urges parents to educate their kids to be on guard against sexual predators. John Harchie, CBS News, Washington.
Yosemite National Park rangers are asking for the public's help in finding Walter Reinhard. The 66-year-old Arizona man went hiking in the White Wolf area of the park September 20th and hasn't been seen since. Jim Shenevy, CBS.
News Radio 1180, WHAM. In-depth team coverage to keep you informed. Rochester's news leader, 24 hours a day. Depend on it.
Here's WHAM's radar weather for Rochester and Western New York. Partly to mostly cloudy, mild and breezy for the overnight. Below 63 to 68. Could be a quick spotty shower on the west side. And then during the day on Wednesday, still on the warm, breezy side, clouds will limit the sun, though. There'll be a period of showers, even a thunderstorm in spots. Wednesday's high 75 to 80. Thursday, noticeably cooler and breezy, with morning gray skies breaking for sunshine. Thursday's high 63 to 68. This is WHAM's Kevin Williams.
How do you spend your morning drive time?
Gas break hog. Gas break hog. Hog, hog, punch. Gas, gas, gas.
Doesn't it make more sense to use your time to become informed, educated, entertained? That's why we're here. Weather and traffic every 10 minutes. Sports with Brad Davies. Entertainment news with Bill Klein. And, of course, Beth and Chet.
First time I've ever been early for work.
The Wham! Morning News.
Except for all those daylight savings days. Lousy farmers.